Good morning and welcome to the Community Living Show. We were supposed to have a guest today, but unfortunately they weren't able to make it, but I was able to record a conversation with them yesterday. And good morning. Again, you're listening to the Community Living Show here on CITR 101.9 FM here in UBC Vancouver, and I'm Michael Rubin. And Kelly is running a little delayed today, so we're just going to go ahead with the show. Like I said, we were supposed to have a guest today, Tim and Shannon Dixon, and because of what Tim is trying to accomplish with a walk for Shannon to get treatment for MS, he's actually on the road to Prince George from their home, and he wasn't going to be able to talk this morning. So I had to actually record a conversation we had over the phone yesterday. So let's listen to that conversation now. Okay. Here with Shannon and Tim Dixon. Shannon was diagnosed with MS or multiple sclerosis, and Tim, her husband, is about to embark on a walk from Prince George, B.C. to Vancouver, B.C. in hopes to raise funds for a stem cell treatment for Shannon to help her with the symptoms that she has with her MS. So, welcome Shannon and welcome Tim.
Hi.
Hello.
So, Shannon, you have MS, and how long ago were you diagnosed?
6 years ago, I started going in for testing for all kinds of things, trying to track down what was kind of going on with me. And then they stopped testing me when I found out I was pregnant with my son. And shortly thereafter, they started again, and about 4 years ago, came back and said, it's definitely MS. We've ruled everything else out.
Mm-hmm. So that was that quite a bit of a process for you?
It was. My mom has neuralgia, so they put down the numbness in my hand. They said it was probably neuralgia, could be carpal tunnel syndrome. The cold, wet foot, that could just be pinched nerves. So they started looking for pinched nerves and things like that. And then they took a whole pile of blood and told me they were testing for things like Lyme disease and stuff like that. And then, like I say, I found out I was pregnant with our son. And they said, yeah, we don't want to do anything else till you're not pregnant anymore. And after he was born, I had, in a matter of very short time, I had lost all the feeling in my hand right to my elbow. So they started with MRIs, and I came home after one MRI and got a phone call within a couple of days from our family doctor, Andrew Lodge. And he asked me to come in and see him, and I went down, and a rather emotional Andrew told me that he didn't want to have to tell me this. He was hoping for something simple that was going to be a minor fix. And in fact, it was multiple sclerosis and there was no fix.
Wow. So that sounds like very much like an emotional roller coaster.
When they said neuralgia, I know my mom can't, if there's, the temperature is chilly out, she has a lot of pain in her face, and if you have cold hands, and ever since I was a child, if your hands were cold and you touched my mom, she was physically in pain. So, but I thought, well, if it's neuralgia, it's something my mom can help me deal with. And then when they talked about carpal tunnel syndrome, it made sense because I was a professional cook and a waitress for a lot of years. It's a lot of repetitive motion. And then they, nope, it's not that. And it just seemed like nobody had an answer. And then they gave me an answer. And even still, it wasn't really an answer because I didn't really know what it was.
Right. Because I've... You hear this a lot out of people, especially with hidden disabilities, that it takes them a while to even find a diagnosis for you. You know, so in of course you're going back and forth, and the doctor is like, "I just want this to be over with." Was that how you felt going through this?
Yeah, I wanted an answer, and I kept saying, I don't even care what the answer is, and no matter how scary it is or not scary it is or anything, I just want an answer. I want to know why I'm losing feeling in parts of my body, and my foot feels cold and wet all the time, doesn't matter what I do. And I had my kids had mentioned things like my ability to speak as clearly as I had in the past was not as good as it had been, and that I was getting very forgetful. I was the grammar Nazi around here all the time. My kids were in school, and all of a sudden I was trying to figure out the right word or the meaning to words. And for me, that was, I didn't even realize it was happening until it was mentioned, and I wanted some kind of an answer. And honestly, when they first told me MS, it didn't really seem like a scary answer because I had no idea what it was. I mean, what is MS? There is no real answer to it. And then I started looking into the possible symptoms. And I got all this printed out paperwork from the MS clinic in Vancouver on, you know, these are the levels of disability that can come with, and I kind of wandered around going, well, okay, I have MS, but, you know, how bad is it? It's not bad. I mean, you know, I have some body aches and pains and these minor things going on, but I have an answer. And then at Christmas time, we had a car accident, and we totaled our truck, and actually my oldest daughter's truck was written off as well. And the stress of everything and it being Christmas time, I had a major relapse where in the past they'd always been pretty minor. And in a matter of 2 weeks, I couldn't get in and out of my own bed. Tim had to carry me from bed to my couch. I totally lost the use of my left hand. And they did a CT scan looking for a possible brain bleed. They sent me to Vancouver for another MRI, and it's a major relapse, and these things are quite possibly permanent.
Wow. So recently you've seen a big height or reach in your symptoms. So what is it? I know that if you're walking from Prince George, you have to be near Prince George. How far do you actually have to go for all of your treatment? Do you have to come all the way to Vancouver? Is that correct?
Yeah, I have to go all the way to Vancouver. It's a 16 to an 18 hour drive to get from Pellicula, where we live, to there. And we generally drive because Tim goes to all my appointments with me. And because we have the two younger kids, I've spent maybe in total since my 8-year-old was born, maybe 5 nights away from her in her life. I'm there every single night. So we take them with us. So it's Tim, me, and the two kids jump in our whatever vehicle, and we drive all the way to Vancouver for whatever they need me to go there for.
Well, that's what kind of stress does that actually put the whole family into?
A fair bit of stress. Financially, it's really difficult. Up until just after Christmas, when we totaled our truck and we had to get another secondhand vehicle, we bought a diesel this time because generally better on fuel. Before we were running a gas engine, and just our traveling itself was $600 to $700 for us to get from here to there, and that's not hotel costs or food or anything else. So 1 to 2 times a year, Tim and I would load up in the truck and drive all the way to Vancouver and do as many appointments as we could all at one time.
Mm-hmm. So does the actual distance that put a hamper on some of your medical treatment, like because you're so far away from the doctor, how often do you actually get to see the doctor, and how's the reporting back to, I guess, to your family doctor?
I see my neurologist, it's supposed to be once a year. Last year I saw her intern, and I saw her for about 5 minutes before she came in just to say how's it going to her intern and then left. This year, this month now, I am going to be seeing her, hopefully, and not another intern. But once a year I go down and I have an MRI done, usually at either UBC or at St. Paul's.
Mm-hmm.
And then once a year I get to see her, and outside of that, I see my family doctor.
Okay. And your family doctor's back there in, as you said, Bella Coola, is that right?
Yeah, in Bella Coola.
Yeah. So, okay, so that probably helps some to have the family doctor being very close then.
It does help. He's not a specialist in MS, but I feel I'm very lucky to have Andrew as my doctor, because when something's come up, he goes the extra mile to find out, is this MS or is this possibly something else that we haven't considered? And he's really supportive of, you know, whatever it is that I feel I need. Like physiotherapy, let's get you in to see the physiotherapist who's here every 6 weeks approximately, and see if we can get something done to improve the mobility in your hand for you so you can at least do up your own zipper. But if I want to go to have physiotherapy specifically for MS, I have to travel to Vancouver.
So either way, for your MS treatments, it's traveled to Vancouver.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you said something just now that, you know, to help doing up your own zipper. You know, I'm a dad of 5 kids, and I know how much work it is, especially when they're younger, dealing with all of their needs. It's like, so what kind of struggle has that been for you, trying to, you know, dealing with everything that your kids need and having MS hamper some of your mobility?
It's a learning curve for everyone. My two kids, are the two younger ones, are pretty amazing. They both know mommy has MS. They know at Christmas time things got really, really bad, and mommy's working really hard at trying to do as much as she can and fix as much as she can. But it's things like my son has he got a new pair of shoes, runners, that he calls run fast, and they are his favorite shoes. They've got like these wings off the side of them, and they're lace up. And he will sit in front of me very patiently for 5-10 minutes, if that's what it takes for me to finally manage to tie his shoelaces on his shoes. He asks every morning, can you do up my jacket? And every morning he stands and is very patient and helps to hold the zipper so that I can put the two pieces together on his jacket and pull it down so that he can operate the zip part for me. Mm-hmm. But it's hard because I can't do things like yesterday. They weren't at school. They spent most of the day out jumping on the trampoline and stuff, and the walk from the house to the trampoline can be tiring, so I don't get out as much as I used to. he wants me to come out and help him ride his bike, and he has to, he's very understanding, but gets very frustrated when I tell him, I can't do that. You have to wait. Daddy will be home in a couple of hours, or maybe Heather will come over and I can keep the baby in the house and she can come out and help you ride your bike, or right. Yeah, you have to wait for somebody else.
So it's, so the kids have to deal out a good chunk of patience themselves, because
they are definitely learning patience.
Yeah. Well, it sounds in that respect, you're a great mom. You're able to teach them patience and kindness, huh?
Well, it's by necessity. I mean, in order for me to be able to do other things for them, then they know I can't do certain things. It does lead to a lot of frustration and upset at times with them. But then Daddy comes home from work, and he every night gets them tucked into bed, and they read a couple of chapters of the Animorphs books together. Or just lately we've started watching things like Animal Planet documentaries and things as a family together. So they're learning that they've had to trade some things for other things, and that can still be okay.
So it sounds like you have a very close-knit family. Everybody's very supportive of one another. That's really great for a family, right?
Yeah, my older four children, all of them were living at home up until a couple of days ago, and then my one daughter moved to Edmonton with her boyfriend. But my other three children live here, and they're an infinite source of help where it comes to the house and the kids, and absolutely anything that pretty much comes up, they're right there. They've been a lot of help trying to organize things for this walk for Tim, and there's been an awful lot of don't worry, my oldest son saying don't worry about it, Tim, you know, I'll make sure there's wood in the house for Mom so that, you know, I'll get the fire going for her, and you know, I'll take the garbage down to the dump every week. And my oldest two daughters, you know, don't worry about it, Tim, we'll make sure we get Mom to any appointments she has and out to do grocery shopping, and we'll help with the cooking. And now my oldest daughter is traveling to Vancouver with me next week to go for appointments for another MRI and to see my neurologist, because Tim can't be here with me, and the two kids are staying here with my son and my second oldest daughter. And so it's without my kids, my older kids and Tim, I don't think I could do this.
The most powerful motivational speeches that I have ever heard came from people who told me I couldn't do something. You know why? Because when they told me I couldn't do it, I was bound and determined to show them that I could.
Did you know CITR has an accessibility collective? Our new collective serves to explore issues of inclusion, equity, and accessibility for people with physical and cognitive disabilities on campus and beyond. If you love making radio, listening to radio, or want to get involved for the first time, come join our collective. We include people of all abilities, experience levels, and backgrounds in the production and programming of our show. Tune in to our weekly show, All Access Pass, from 5 to 6 p.m. on Thursdays for interviews, music, news, events, and awesome dialogues. If you want to get involved, email accessibilitycollective@citr.ca. If only I could dream we could start again. Fox Cabaret and Hidden City Records present Ora Kogan live in concert on Thursday, April 14th. In celebration of her latest release, Shadowland, psych folk chanteuse Ora Kogan will be backed by a four-piece kick-ass band. special guests Ace Martins and Paul Stewart, come on out to the Fox Cabaret and get your tickets at the door.
A fundraiser that Tim is trying to embark on by walking from Prince George, B.C. to Vancouver, B.C. to raise funds for his wife, Shannon, so she can have a stem cell treatment to help with her MS symptoms. Go ahead, Tim. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No worries. Yeah, basically, in a nutshell, it's put a real damper on, like, the day-to-day fun activities that we might all get up to together. I mean, the responsibilities that have changed, that's kind of a given. Things like whether it's just regular chores around the house or, you know, things as simple as dishes or dinner. These things Shannon used to rattle off in a day without even thinking about it. She'd have the houses all always taken care of. Everything was, you know, that's kind of what she did. Everything was taken care of with no real issue. Now, there's a lot of days where, you know, she doesn't ask, but you can see she's too tired to try and make some of the stuff happen. So it's up to the rest of us to be able to step up and take on some of these responsibilities and keep the household rolling as a unit, and make sure everything continues functioning.
Yeah. I guess let's get into some of the emotion behind this. Is like, what's it like? Shannon's your wife. Obviously, you love her very much. What's it like emotionally for you to see your wife struggle with these symptoms?
I won't lie, there has been a few times where things have gotten a little testy because of, you know, my lack of patience at some time or another, and it also permeates the entire family, where, you know, Shannon will have not been able to get to doing something, even as simple as an example, maybe changing the laundry over from the washer to the dryer, but somebody was going out at some point in time and a pair of jeans wasn't washed and now they're upset about it, and it can make up for a bit of a perfect storm once in a while, but the thing is at the end of the day, as much as all of us tell her, like, look, we're here for you, we support you, we understand you, we've got your back, none of us have any clue physically exactly what it feels like to be in her shoes. We can all try to understand and we can all try to relate, but the fact is none of us can even imagine what she's going through on a daily basis. So there's times when things can get a little testy, but for the most part, what it all boils down to is at the end of the day, we've all got each other's back.
Yeah, Shannon actually did put a very good description to how you all of you support one another. And that must help some, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, the fact that we all have each other's back and we function just as much as a team as we do a family, we all take responsibility for bits and pieces. Her four oldest kids have been invaluable resources of be it time or if you want to call it daycare, for if I have to run Shannon from here to there for a doctor's appointment here in the valley or whatever, they've always had our back. And when it comes to Shannon and I and everything that's gone down, whether it's, you know, her having all these crippling symptoms, if she's in need of something, is not even a question. None of us question it. We just do what we need to do. There's not any extra thought into it. None of us feel burdened by it. You can see it in her face sometimes that she's feeling like really, really terrible for having to rely on everybody as much as she does. But the fact is, we've all been relying on her for years, so why not try to return the favor a little bit?
That's a really good way of putting it. You know, in our society, we tend for the day-to-day life of being around, we tend to lend on the lady of the house to you know, for food, clean clothes, you know, that sort of stuff, right? You know, yeah. And it is it's a good way to look at it. Did you're just trying to give back a little bit of what she's given through the years also, right?
It might be comical, but we were watching an episode of Planet Earth or something last night or the night before, and there was a little skit done about the macaques in India and how the whole family hierarchy is run by a matriarch. And when an intruding troop of these macaques comes into place, the first thing they go for is the matriarch, but the whole family builds literally a wall around her, and it makes it almost impossible to reach her. So if you want to draw a picture of it, that's a pretty good one. Just because it's MS and it's invisible and we can't see it and it's hard to understand doesn't mean we don't all band together to protect our matriarch, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
Rendez-vous de la Francophonie is an annual celebration that promotes the French language, heritage, and its numerous cultural expressions. It runs March 6th to 22nd in communities across Canada. La Fondation Canadienne pour le Dialogue des Cultures, in partnership with the National Campus and Community Radio Association, through the Community Radio Fund of Canada and this station, present the RBF series. To help celebrate Rendez-vous de la Francophonie, in 2016, 24 campus and community radio stations from across Canada produce a weekly show highlighting Rendez-vous de la Francophonie events and the importance of bilingualism and Francophone culture and history of Canada. For more information, check out www.ncra.ca/RBF.
The most powerful motivational speeches that I have ever heard came from people who told me I couldn't do something. You know why? Because when they told me I couldn't do it, I was bound and determined to show them that I could.
Did you know CITR has an accessibility collective? Our new collective serves to explore issues of inclusion, equity, and accessibility for people with physical and cognitive disabilities on campus and beyond. If you love making radio, listening to radio, or want to get involved for the first time, come join our collective. We include people of all abilities, experience levels, and backgrounds in the production and programming of our show. Tune in to our weekly show, All Access Pass, from 5 to 6 p.m. on Thursdays for interviews, music, news, events, and awesome dialogues. If you want to get involved, email accessibilitycollective@citr.ca. If only I could dream, we could start again.
Together to protect our matriarch, if you want to call it that.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds like a comical example, but it's true.
It is.
Yeah. So I know you in all descriptions, it sounds like you have to go out to work every day, you know, to bring money home for the family and everything. But it sounds like, I guess the question is, would you want to be anywhere else than where you are right now?
No, not even a question.
Not even a question. No, yeah. It doesn't sound like it. You would want your wife to be better, healthy, all that sort of stuff, but you wouldn't want to be anywhere else. That's what it sounds like.
I told her if things get, you know, worse to, you know, the absolute worst case scenario, which is, you know, she can't take care of herself in any way. If it was to come down to it, I would do whatever it took to be here with her 24 hours a day to make sure she's taken care of.
Yeah.
Be that as it is, I mean, whatever I have to try and give up, sell, or work on to make happen, you know, maybe take a job at nighttime doing janitory work so that maybe while she's sleeping, I can be out and making a small wage.
Mm-hmm. You sound like a really good example to all husbands out there in that respect. You know, support your wife no matter what. What is your favorite thing to do with Shannon right now?
Right now? There's a lot of things. Basically, a lot of times when I come home, we'll work on cooking dinner together, and that's kind of a highlight of my day, because by trade, she's a professional chef, but because her hands don't work as well as they used to, I tried to, you know, be her extra set of hands, so she'll just tell me what to do, and I'll try and do it the best I can, and, you know, it ends up taking two of us to do one person's job because she's got all the know-how and everything, and she instructs me carefully on how to do things, and then afterwards the whole family sits down together to eat dinner, and we reap the rewards of her knowledge in the kitchen. So
yeah,
I'm learning a lot from her for sure, but that's one of my favorite things to do. And between that and once in a while, just, I don't know, I guess ever since all this has come about, just spending time together, whether we're walking through the aisles of the grocery store, you know, collecting groceries or commenting on the insane prices that things are getting up to now, and you know, things are really different. A long time ago, we used to have a bunch of four-wheelers, and we'd put the kids on their own little four-wheelers, and we'd get on our four-wheelers, and we'd all buzz around, but those days seem to be pretty much long gone. So instead, we just spend our time here and around the property and just trying to enjoy each other's company.
Wow. That's... In a lot of respects, it sounds like a wonderful life. If only we could make the symptoms go away. So
it could be, you know?
Yeah. So let's get start touch base on the walk. Why are you going on the walk?
When Shannon had her relapse at Christmas time, we decided then that we need to try and find something, anything at all, whether it's experimental, whether it's whatever it could possibly be out there. There's got to be somebody somewhere that has some kind of an answer. We can't just sit here doing nothing. We've got to fight. And I was at work at the time, and Shannon was... all she had was her smartphone, so she was on the internet looking around to try and find anything to do with MS that might be a treatment, however experimental it was, and she started researching at Christmas time, and her initial finds were that whatever you want to try is going to be in the tens of thousands of dollars. And so we looked a little deeper and found that you know, some of these businesses are just that. They're businesses. They're designed to get people that don't want to spend the time researching to spend money on treatments that are, you know, fly by night and a little bit shady. But then there's other more legitimate businesses that seem to be, you know, really doing their level best to care for the patients. So she's sorting the wheat from the chaff, so to speak. And in doing so, we've been looking at the price tags on some of these things, and I've just been shaking my head thinking there's no way I'll ever be able to afford that. I mean, I make $15 an hour working at our local sawmill, and it's just not possible. So we were watching the news at the one night, and I noticed there's a story on about a bloody kitten that was up in a tree. And I shook my head. I thought, you know, if that bloody cat can get on TV and get some attention for, you know, just being a cat in a tree, then maybe there's a chance that I can actually generate some buzz and advertise myself and what I want to do and try crowdfunding. There's a lot of success stories out there, but the one thing that all the success stories have in common is either the person is incredibly popular and famous or something, mm-hmm. or that they've done something out of this world crazy. So I thought, well, I might not be the most, you know, popular person on the planet, but I might be able to do something crazy that gets a few people to turn their heads and go, wait a second, that guy's nuts. Let's take a second look at what he's doing. And when I was thinking about it, I thought, well, I could grab a bicycle and go across the country. This was before I'd even talked to Shannon about the idea. I was considering different options, but everything I came to, I thought, well, a bicycle can break down. You can get flat tires. You can all these things. I thought, no, the most reliable thing that I own is my own two legs. So what if I was to do a million steps, such as MS, and try and save my Shannon? It sounds a little corny maybe, but it gets the point across.
It does get the point across, right?
Yeah, so I don't know. I used to listen to a lot of CBC radio, and there's Terry O'Reilly's show on there called Under the Influence, and it's all about advertising and how to get attention and how companies, you know, do their advertising, and the ones that are good at it and the ones that fail at it. And I thought, you know, the only way I'm going to do this is if I've got a good cause, which I've got, if I've got the determination and the tenacity, which I've been born with, and if I've got the ability to do it, which I believe I do. So if I can put all these pieces together and build this puzzle, I can show people this picture and maybe they'll bite, and maybe they'll help to support me, even just a couple bucks per person. There's millions of people. Maybe I can make this actually happen.
That is one of the best reasons I've ever heard to have a crowdfund. You see all the different crazy products and all that kind of stuff, but this one is grassroots, all about family values and just a husband trying to show his wife how much he actually loves her. That's an amazing theme behind the crowdfund. So when do you actually start?
I'll be starting Saturday at 9 o'clock at I believe it's the Prince George University Hospital.
Okay. And you're walking to where in Vancouver?
I'm going to be walking to the UBC MS clinic.
Okay. the UBC MS Clinic. So if people want to come out and cheer you on, is there a post-it pass someplace on your crowdfund that we can show people that this is the path you're actually going to take, so they can follow along with you and maybe meet up with you or something like that?
I'm going to be in touch with Shannon as I'm going, and I don't want to put anything in stone just as of yet, because I don't know what the future holds. Mm-hmm. But the idea here is, as I'm going along and I can forecast within a few days or even a week ahead of what I'm doing, once I get into a rhythm, that I'll be able to say, look, Shannon, tell, you know, whoever that would be interested, that I'm going to be going through Williams Lake on this date and this time. And Shannon will be updating fundraiser and updating Facebook and updating the GoFundMe page. Okay. She's going to be my support on the ground, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And, but I'm going to be, it doesn't sound like it's going to be 800 anymore. Actually, when I started adding up the route that I've been suggested to take, it's going to actually be 1100. So,
wow.
'Cause instead of just going through Kamloops and down the Coquihalla or through the canyon to Vancouver, which are shorter routes, there are really long routes with nothing on the road. And I've talked to a number of my friends and family around here, and they've all agreed with me that maybe the place to go through would be the Okanagan, Penticton, Kelowna, Peachland, that area, because there's communities a lot more often along the way.
Yeah, and I would think that going through different towns and everything, that would draw way more attention than just walking down empty highway. I do need to go to another station break. You're listening to the Community Living Show here on. So we had to cut it short because we actually got a bit of a late start on this today. And Kelly's here. He's going to tell us what's coming up for next week's show, maybe.
Upcoming shows. I don't know if it's next week's show, but yesterday was about the writers and drivers demanding for handy dart service. And yesterday they had their quarterly report meeting that was happening out near New Westminster, and I will talk more about it. And of course you can read all about it on the 24-hour news that is on page 3 on the headlines, writers and drivers demand handy dart on go in-house issue. So have a look at that on the 24-hour newspaper.
Hmm. Cool. I'll be sure to check that out. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's lots of places to find the 24 hours. Just look by the SkyTrain, right?
Or, well, I found one out near at Dunbar and 41st, where I just saw the headlines of the rating in front of the cover of the page where it has the meeting for it and everything. So I'm like, okay, pick one up.
Awesome. So,
excuse me.
Anything else happening going on?
Well, again, dealing with News 101 that is going to be upcoming, not this week, but mostly on the issues on transit. I'm trying to get an interview with Tim Lewis that's possibly on the television side of things on Access Television. And lots of things. Lots of things going on through my life.
Cool. So, back to Tim and Shannon. Go on to GoFundMe, and there it's Tim and Shannon Dixon, and it is A Million Steps. I did put it up on our Facebook page, so go to GoFundMe, please, and give them a couple dollars, you know. I saw that they're looking for $44,000, and they have about $1,400 right now. So
this is under the Community Living Radio Show Facebook page?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yep. So check that out.
Yeah, check that out. And I guess that's about all we have for
for today.
Yeah, for a very short time for myself. So,
well,
my apologies.
Well, you were hard at work on another assignment that, we're going to have coming up pretty soon. So, transit is always an important issue for everyone in the community, especially for those that have disabilities.
Absolutely.
So yeah, so. You're doing great work there, Kelly.
Thanks.
All right. So that's about it.
Oh, and if you want to get contact us as well, email us, Community Living Radio Show, our communityliving radio@gmail.com. And we are also on Twitter @CLivingRadio. If you have any other concerns on that, please let us know.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, everybody's doing a great job of contacting us, especially through Facebook and Twitter. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. All right.
So that's our show.
That's it. All right. We will see some of you tomorrow on CFRO and the rest of you wherever you are on the NCRA networks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.